Hello, folks. It's Audrey here on Why We Do the Work. Thank you to Beyond Toxics for sponsoring this podcast. If you want to, head on over to our website at beyondtoxics.org to see all the fantastic happenings at our organization. And of course, thank you to my pod partner, Crystal. You can always reach me at aab@beyondtoxics.org. Last episode, we chatted with Kara Brighton. Kara is the Education and Community Engagement Coordinator for the Holt Center, which, as a reminder, is a staple performing arts center in Eugene, Oregon. Kara shared her podcast space with myself and Kelly Ferguson. Remember her? The teacher at Kalapuya High School, which is in West Eugene? She was on the show with her awesome student, Metzley. Kelly, Metzley, and Kara were guests on my series titled West Eugene Speaks. My goal is to continue to have guests on the show from the West Eugene community for this series of episodes. Bringing the conversation back to the reason we have this podcast is always my goal. This space, after all, is a place for folks to share their stories, people to know that the folks in West Eugene have a voice, and to educate the community about what is happening in their neighborhood. I also have some very exciting news to share with you. Remember J.H. Baxter? You know, that wood treatment plant that I'm always talking about? That place that poisoned West Eugene for decades? The place that stole lives and joy from so many families impacted by the dioxin that spewed throughout the community since the 1940s? Yeah, that place. Well, the owner, the culprit, the one who allowed all this to happen, Georgia Baxter Krause, pled guilty to the charges brought against the company. After being charged with over $300,000 in penalties and fines, which is just a grain of sand compared to the damage she's allowed to happen, and lying about what was truly going on at the facility. In a news release, the U.S. Department of Justice said J.H. Baxter pumped millions of gallons of liquid processed waste and released it illegally into the surrounding air throughout 2019. Daily production laws showed between January and February of 2019, Baxter operators boiled off hazardous waste water in 4 of 5 of its retorts on a total of 136 known days. In case you're wondering, a retort is a large cylinder that's sealed to contain the lumber. Remember, it's a wood treatment plant. So the retorts are large cylinders that are sealed while containing lumber to pressurize hazardous chemicals such as creosote and other hazardous materials into the wood to make them waterproof and resistant to insects. Yeah, she did that. Well, we got her. And this is an astronomical victory for West Eugene. Will it give back the lives she's taken and the health of so many community members? Absolutely not. There are so many aha moments throughout this whole Georgia Baxter mess. Wouldn't you know, her sentencing is on Earth Day. Yeah, that's right, Georgia, on Earth Day. Congratulations to West Eugene, and thank you to everyone who fought for this historical justice. I would like to give a trigger warning for this episode. We will be discussing cancer and the impact it has had on a family in West Eugene. If cancer triggers you, please take care of yourself. I told a reporter recently that I feel like I've been holding my breath for 7 years. 7 long years of fighting for West Eugene, fighting for Zion, and all the kids, adults, and beloved pets that didn't make it. I can breathe. I can finally breathe. Today, I have the pleasure of chatting with Lisa and Eric Dion. Lisa and Eric live in Eugene. Eric grew up in West Eugene, living and playing in a neighborhood where his family's home was located, very close to the J.H. Baxter plant. I met these two back in May of 2023 They were part of the Bethel Clean Energy Project. This project partners with the Eugene Water and Electric Board, acronym EWEB for those folks that live in Eugene. We partner with EWEB to provide participants with home energy scores to determine what upgrades their homes need in order to be clean. This happens by way of things like heat pumps, heat pump water heaters, and insulation. I'm not going to go into depth about that project, but if you want to learn or possibly participate in our spring cohort, reach out to me at that AAB at beyondtoxics.org. We're about to start our fourth cohort. So, we're going to get into it. You two got married in May of 2022. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, you guys were just going along, newlyweds, ready to start and plan your lives together. Summer, in August, tragedy struck. I read that this happened a week before both of your birthdays. Are you guys both Leos?
We are.
Yes. Yeah,
we're just one day apart. Well, 2 years and one day, but my birthday's August 5th. Eric's birthday's August 6th.
Oh, my gosh. Mine's August 11th.
No way.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Leo Fest.
Yeah. Three Lions just catting it up.
Yeah.
I had no idea that you guys were Lions. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, the best sign there is, in my opinion.
Yes, it is. And you know, my kids right now would go, that is the most Leo thing that any of you guys can say. And I would say, yes, yes, it is.
It's true. Yeah.
Because it's the best one. Who wouldn't want to be a lion? So who wouldn't want to be a lion? I wouldn't want to be a crab, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Or Scorpio. Sorry, husband. My husband's a Scorpio. But Leo's the best one. So I'm glad that you guys are both Leos. I feel excited about that.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad that you guys are both here and to talk with me because, like I said, this series is called West Eugene Speaks. And I think that it's going to be a series of episodes that is really healing for the community and exciting for them to be able to hear folks that live in their neighborhood and have been impacted by something so tragic and scary as cancer.
Yeah.
So to start things off, how did you guys meet?
Well, we initially met in a trailer. a good friend of ours, both of ours, introduced us, and he lived in a trailer. But we didn't start dating till maybe a couple years later.
Yeah, okay.
That's cute.
I'm a musician. Lisa's best friend was a musician, and we were friends as musicians. So it's just kind of playing music and just like interacting in that social circle is how we really got to know each other.
What do you play?
Mostly guitar and keyboards.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And how fun you guys got. You were set up.
More or less. I mean, I was hanging out with my friend and then Eric just randomly showed up and the three of us just kind of hung out that night. And then fast forward a couple of years and I think we were... Where were we? Somewhere, like mutual friend's house, and Eric was there. And I was like, oh, you're that guy from that one night a long time ago. And then our friend group, like, you know, we had a lot of mutual friends. So we just started, we became friends that way. And mm-hmm. eventually, probably a couple of years later, started dating. And here we are.
How long were you guys dating before you got married?
A long time.
At least 15 years.
Yeah.
Really?
I made Lisa wait.
Yeah.
Really long. She grew up a lot faster than I did.
Yeah.
We've known this probably since about 2009, 2010. That's been a long time.
You guys grew up together.
Yeah, we did.
I love that. I love it. A couple of lions just hanging out and grazing and
Yeah.
Music and becoming friends. I think that's really great. My husband and I used to date when we were 19. And I know. And we had to live a whole other life first. We had to have other kids. And, you know, we came back together in 2016. And I mean, I was like, okay, you want to date me or what? Why are you calling me? And he's like, yeah, I'm getting a divorce. And I said, okay, well, what does that even mean? And he's like, well, I would like to date you. And I said, okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah.
So we've known each other since we were 19 years old. And it's like, I can't imagine there being a world without him, because he's always just been in my world at some capacity. So
right. That's so true. I can relate to that.
Yeah, that's my guy.
Oh.
I know. His name's Jason, by the way.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah, Jason. Okay. So we're gonna get into it now.
Okay.
And we could still do some talking and laughing and hanging out, but let's get into the conversation, because I'm excited for you guys to tell your stuff, your truth. Yeah. So Eric, these questions are going to be for you. Tell me a little bit about where you lived growing up.
I lived in a home on Baxter Street, and I grew up there my entire childhood, up and through high school and the beginning of college.
Wow. So you went to Willamette?
Yes.
Nice. Wolverines, yes.
Wolverines, that's right. Girls basketball, they're kicking butt right now.
Are they really?
Yeah.
My kids went to Willamette. My son graduated from Willamette, and then Zion moved up here to finish high school with me when she was in 11th grade? No, 10th. She was in 10th grade, and she was like, I want to go live with my mom, so... Of course, I was get excited that she wanted to come live with me. So, yeah, they were both Wolverines, though.
Mm.
A couple of Wolverines. So you lived on Baxter Street and called Baxter Street. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So you lived on Baxter Street all your life, going to Willamette, hanging out, playing in your yard, just doing regular stuff because it was your house. It was where you lived. And how close did you live to J.H. Baxter?
It was less than a quarter mile.
Wow.
Just down the street.
And were you curious about what was going on over there?
No. I mean, I don't think I really paid attention. I did talk with my mom, and she recalls, you know, there was a breeze that come from, I guess that would be the south. Towards the north, so we were north of the facility.
Oh no! Mm-hmm.
And she would smell kerosene. Something that's how she described what she smelled.
Mm-hmm. See, I didn't know either. I didn't know either, Eric. I mean, I lived in West Eugene most of my adult life, and we lived there because—and I've shared this—but we lived there because we could afford to live there. And we really felt comfortable there. So most of my adult life, and my kids were raised in West Eugene. Most of that time, I didn't pay attention to what was going on at J.H. Baxter or any of the other facilities. I noticed, but I didn't know that it was hurting me. So,
yeah, it's a very industrial area, but. You just don't really think about exactly what's going on. Not as a kid.
No. I didn't even think about it as an adult. I really didn't. I mean, I saw the smokestacks. You know, I saw stuff coming out of there. But I don't know. Maybe in my mind, I just thought it was like just steam. I wasn't thinking about it actually having stuff in it.
Sure. Yeah. And it's part of just, I'm no specialists in this, but we're in a valley and things just kind of get stuck in the atmosphere around here.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't air out.
Yeah. Valley of sickness.
Valley. That's right.
Yeah. Everybody out there listening, the Willamette Valley is in the Valley of Sickness. it's just in a, it's in a valley, and everything swirls around and gets stuck there. And that means allergens and poison sticks around, just dancing around in the air. So, Eric, can you tell me what was happening health wise that made you go to the doctor? What was going on?
Well, so I will do my best to recall everything. But the first things that were happening was my head was throbbing and I was nauseous. And, I feel, I help me with this, Lisa. I felt like I was, falling or not steady. Is that true? I can't remember.
It progressed. So he was fine. He was like perfectly healthy. It was the end of July, like last week of July of 2022. And over the course of the week, he went from just, he'd wake up having a headache that would dissipate throughout the day. And by the end of the week, he was vomiting and with a terrible headache. He couldn't sleep. He became, what's the right word? Kind of delusional. Like he just started talking gibberish to me one morning while he was vomiting and had a terrible headache. And he was like, I just remember him like crawling on the floor, throwing up in the garbage can and just not being able to speak to me coherently. And that's when I said, we need to take you to the emergency room right now. And he had been to urgent care. We took him to the ER like a few days prior because his headache just was unrelenting. And they did a CT scan and they said that that checked out. Everything looked good. So they sent him home. And I think they like, they prescribe you some pain meds or something and Zofran, an anti-nausea med. It didn't really help. And so 2 days later, I think, that happened on a Monday that we went to the ER and they did the CT scan. He went home Monday. He went to urgent care and I think they just gave him some pain meds and sent him home. And I remember he didn't remember that day at all, like talking to him about it later on. And then Tuesday was the morning that he woke up and was talking gibberish to me. I don't even know what he was saying. And I called his mom and said, Eric needs to go to the ER right now. And so he went and he was ended up being hospitalized and was there for 7 weeks.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Came on so fast. Really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The week,
it wasn't gradual.
So 1 week prior, we started the home buying process too. Exactly 1 week, and our money went into escrow the day he went to the hospital. So that was another layer onto this stressful time. So, yeah, that was really not fun.
No, not fun and crazy and scary and overwhelming and made you feel in shock and all those things.
All the emotions.
How long were you feeling sick? Was it during that whole 7 week time? Like what led up? How long were you like, I just really don't feel good, or it just boom happened?
Yeah, it came on really suddenly, I'd say. And he was severely sick. Like very severely. I remember being in the hospital with him and looking at him in the hospital bed thinking I was watching him die, and the doctors had no idea what was going on with him. And it was really hard to watch him deteriorate day by day, and the doctors had no answers and nothing to solve it. It was really hard to watch.
How long after that, when you were in that 7 week period at the hospital, how long did it take for them to realize that it was cancer that you had, and what type of cancer?
Yeah.
Either one can answer this
question. At least A month, right? Month and a half.
Yes and no. Eric doesn't remember much of this time, so I can give more specifics. I know that they were doing a number of tests. They thought at first that he might have had, well, at first they thought he had bacterial meningitis and gave him antibiotics, which made him better. And they actually sent him home and he was home for a day. But then he very quickly deteriorated again and we took him back to the hospital. And then he started having seizures because they thought it was something else and they had a treatment that they were going to try, but then he started having seizures and they were like, well, that's not it then if he's having seizures. But they were doing all sorts of tests like, you know, blood tests, MRI tests. They thought it could be bacterial or viral. So they had a infectious disease doctor on his case trying to rule out viruses or bacteria that could be infecting him. And those tests took a long time to come back, I remember. But when we first suspected it was cancer was one of his MRIs came back. They did a whole head and spine MRI and they found a mass in his spinal column. So basically a tumor. And his neurologist at the time came in and told us that this was probably 2 weeks into his hospital stay. I believe it was like August 14th or something. And I remember him coming in and telling us that they found this mass in his spinal column and they didn't know what it was. There was not really a way to biopsy it, they said, or at least it would be really high risk to biopsy it. And they said, if it's cancer, then we kind of know how to treat it. But if it's not cancer, we don't know what to do. So it was like, either way, it was going to be really bad is what I took away from that. And even though we didn't know for sure that it was cancer, I feel like that was the day that we kind of got a diagnosis. Because we knew this thing was in him and we... either way, it was going to be a challenge to get rid of it. God. And I just remember when the doctor came in and, well, I'll be honest, I logged into Eric's My Peace Health and was checking out the test results before the doctor came in and told us, because, you know, we only saw the doctor like once a day.
Yeah.
And so I was like watching his test results come through like a hawk. Like I was updating that all the time. And he went in for the MRI like in the evening. I think it was like 7 o'clock at night or something. And I was checking the MRI and I saw that they found it and they were suspecting cancer. I remember the note and the doctor's note or the radiologist's note said that they were suspecting this specific type of cancer. And of course, I Googled it because I was like, oh, what's that big word? And I Googled it and it was a really not good type of cancer with a really bad prognosis. And that was probably the worst night of my life because Eric was sleeping when I read this. And I got that. I read that, Googled it, and knew about this, but I couldn't talk to anybody about it. Nobody was there to calm me down or anything. And I remember I didn't sleep at all that night and my heart was pounding out of my chest and I was a complete mess the next morning. And then just waiting for the doctor to come in and tell us, like, explain what's going on took most of the day. And I was just sitting there in my own anxiety with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was, I feel like that was the day that we really got the diagnosis, even though he was officially diagnosed at the end of August. But when that came, I was like, well, yeah, we kind of already knew this. So,
oh my gosh, Lisa, yeah. That is really super scary.
Yeah.
You know, when I found out about Zion, you know, they called in the night and it was 10:47. I remember what time it was and told me what was going on and suspected that it was Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, of course, I Googled it real quick, Dr. Google.
Yep.
And I was thinking, okay, great. There's two different kinds of lymphoma. There's non-Hodgkin's and then there's Hodgkin's. And I was thinking, okay, good. Let's let her have non-Hodgkin's because that sounds less scary.
Right.
And it wasn't. And I was glad that it wasn't because that's the one that gets you is, you know, it's harder to treat is the non-Hodgkin's. Mm-hmm. So I know that feeling that you had when you Googled and read about it, and it's super scary. And I stopped Googling after that.
Oh yeah.
Because I could easily get wrapped up and I just stopped that night. I Googled and then I said, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing here. So
yeah,
I'm just going to stop.
Yeah. I learned pretty quick too. Like I just remember Googling that big scary word and it said prognosis was about 6 weeks with treatment. And I remember just like, that's all I saw. And I just put my phone down and I just basically had a panic attack all night long. It was terrifying.
There was nobody there to say, hey,
no.
Give you a hug or anything.
Right. And his nurse that night was a freshly graduated traveling nurse. And they were awful and incompetent. And Eric was hallucinating because he was on a med that he shouldn't have been given. And it was a terrible night. I just remember when his nurse came in the next morning, I just like fell in her arms and sobbed, told her what was going on and told her about the nurse the night before. I was like, that was the worst night. And she took care of me. She was an angel. She is an angel on earth. Like, I will always remember her. She was amazing.
Yeah.
Definitely one of my favorite nurses of his, but yeah, it was hard.
Like a dream, like a nightmare, right?
Oh,
like a walking nightmare that you couldn't get away from.
Absolutely.
You get attached to nurses though, so I'm glad that you got a good nurse because that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
In the whole situation is to have somebody that cares not only about the patient but also what it could be doing to their family and just being really sensitive about that. So I'm glad that you were able to find a nurse that you felt connected with and was able to be there for you when you needed it.
Yeah.
You have to remind me, was Eric, were you up here at OHSU? I can't remember where you had your treatment. Was it up here in Portland?
That came later.
Okay.
I was at Riverbend. Okay.
And I'm about to get into the word of what kind of cancer it was. What was that? What was that cancer? And when you sat there in the doctor's office, I know that, Lisa, you were already in a nightmare, but when you both were sitting there and they were telling you what type of cancer it was, what was happening to you right then?
Well, we didn't find out what kind of cancer it was for a while. Like the doctor was just suspecting, I think it was carcinomatosis, which is basically when your cancer goes to your brain and it's like any cancer can turn into carcinomatosis, I believe. Just based on what I've Googled.
Stop Googling.
I know. But we didn't find out the type of cancer officially until they ended up doing a biopsy of this tumor. We can get to that later. But, and they sent off the tissue sample to UCSF for genetic sequencing and stuff. And that didn't come until, we didn't find out until close to the end of September. What kind of cancer it was. And I do remember like Eric was in rehab at that time at University District Hospital. He was in an inpatient rehab and we had a telemedicine visit with the he was gonna do radiation. And we had an appointment with the radiation oncologist and she told us his diagnosis and she didn't know what it was. She seemed kind of shocked. She was like, I don't know how to deal with this.
Oh, scary.
And we like, she's like, I have never heard of this before. I don't really know what it is. And she like wrote it out on a sticky note and showed us. She's like, this is the name of it. like we're basically starting from square one. We don't know how to treat this.
Had they ever seen anybody like that before? Had they ever? I mean, no. The nurse said no, but were the doctors also like, "Whoa, what? I don't know, yeah. I don't know what's going on."
Yeah, like I remember his oncologist called me at like 7 a.m, like right in the very beginning, and he was like, "I don't know what I'm doing," and he's like, "If you want Eric to live, you will send him to another part of the country, like MD Anderson or NIH." And he's like, I'd be stabbing in the dark with treatments. I don't know what I'm doing. And he said that he's been, he told me, he was like, I'm consulting with doctors all over the country, trying to figure out how to treat this. And some people have seen others with this cancer, but
very few,
like most of them don't know what to do. And he told me that like, yeah, what did he say? He said that like he could count on like one hand or something how many other people in the country have this cancer. So he was like, yeah, we could send you to other doctors who have maybe seen one, maybe two patients with this cancer, but that's all we got.
That is so scary.
Yeah, it was very scary.
Yeah. Trusting, Lisa's... I mean, you think the doctor knows what they're talking about, and it's,
yeah. I mean, on one hand, I was happy that they were honest with me and telling mm-hmm. me that they didn't know instead of pretending like they knew what they were talking about. But also, it's like, it's not really comforting when you know that nobody knows what they're doing.
No, no. Right now, my brain is like thinking about all kinds of, you know, advocacy mm-hmm. work that could be put into, trying to discover what this is. I mean, we have a clue, Georgia Baxter, but why it's something so strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You were impacted by something that was very strange. So it's going to do all sorts of things. And I just, you know, I know that you both don't really know what like they were going to do. But mm-hmm. what did they end up doing? Like, what was the protocol for that, and what ended up really helping?
No. Well, trial and error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, how many different chemotherapies did I?
I mean, you're only on your second chemotherapy, so we started right away with radiation, because it. I remember Eric came home. Like, we knew that he was being referred to Willamette Valley Cancer Institute. And at first they were saying chemo and radiation. And then once they got the diagnosis of the cancer, they were saying, the literature said radiation or chemo. They didn't really know what kind of chemo to use, I think. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. So they just started with radiation, but there was a pretty big risk because he did a whole brain and spine radiation, and that is not ideal. That can have consequences in and of itself. But so he did, I think, 5 or 6 weeks of radiation every day, 5 days a week. And then when that was done, we kind of waited. We gave it like a month or two. And then did an MRI, and we were told that if the cancer had spread, he was going to start chemo right away. And if the cancer hadn't spread, we would just kind of wait and see mm-hmm. what happened. And so we got the MRI results, and cancer had spread, so started chemo that same day. And the chemo that he started on, it's called trametinib, and it's typically used for, I think, melanoma and lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So they found genetic similarities in his cancer with other more common cancers. So basically his cancer, they call it the BRAF mutation. So it had, which is similar to, I think, melanoma and other lung cancers. So they tried that drug, and there isn't really a gold standard treatment with his cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's, it's kind of like trial and error, like Eric said. So we tried that started that mid-December until about May of 2023. And then from there, we, in that time, we went to Maryland and saw doctors at the NIH, and we were hoping they would refer us to a clinical trial, but going and seeing them, it's kind of funny because we thought they were going to give us answers, and even them were like, yeah, we don't know. Wow. And they were like, here's some clinical trials that you could do. Like, one was in Canada, one was in Southern California, another one was like there with them in Maryland. They were like, yeah, do your research, let us know which one you decide on. Like, they didn't really, and that's like all that we got. And I know that we reached out to some of the those clinical trials, but basically, based on the fact that Eric was already on this other med, excluded him from being accepted into the trial. Or he needed a brain biopsy. And his brain biopsies were inconclusive because the nature of his cancer is diffuse. So there's just basically cancer cells all floating around in his whole central nervous system. So he had one or two brain biopsies, but yeah, they didn't find any cancer in his brain because the cells are too diffuse. It's not like a solid tumor that you can take from. So
that is really, really, really scary.
Yeah.
That it was just, it was kind of just like floating around, like just, there was so much in there.
Yeah. Like, the name of his cancer is diffuse leptomeningeal glioneuronal tumor. So diffuse, and it's like kind of lining the meninges as I understand it. And then on his MRIs, it kind of looks like tentacles coming from the lining of his brain, which are the meninges, into his brain, kind of spreading inward. And then, yeah, he has that solid tumor in his spine. So when, like, they started out with a brain biopsy because that was less risky than going into the tumor. And they were like, well, if it's cancer, it should show up in his brain. And then that was inconclusive. So they had no choice but to do a spinal biopsy, which was really scary because they were saying that there was a very high likelihood that he would be paralyzed from his waist down after that. And, but his doctors were absolutely amazing.
Yes.
Like,
very good surgeons.
Yeah. Amazing surgeons. And it was like such a miracle that he was moving his feet at the end of that surgery that, like, all the nurses, doctors, everyone was coming in to see him. And they were like that night, I remember they were like, Eric, wiggle your toes. And he'd wiggle his toes. And then they just like celebrate, like, yeah, like they could not believe that he was moving his legs after that surgery.
That's a miracle.
Yeah, I was thrilled with that too. I was very nervous about waking up and not being able to feel my legs. So.
Yeah, that was really scary.
It's really super scary, and it pisses me off that you have that cancer in the first place because it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
So you having to go through all that was unnecessary. And that's what makes me so mad about what's going on down in West Eugene, is that it's the pain and the anguish that has been caused was unnecessary and inhumane. So I, you know, when Zion was sick, she doesn't remember a whole lot of that, which I think is a blessing. And as we're having a conversation right now, I know that Eric, you don't remember a lot from what Lisa said. And she shared with me that, you know, you were suffering from dementia, and dementia is for old people. You know, dementia doesn't usually just happen to somebody that's young and vivacious and active, because I know, having conversations with Lisa, that you were very active. Do you remember? You probably don't remember what the dementia was like.
Well, every once in a while, Lisa will tell me something that happened, and I just can't believe it. But my memory, I kind of recall this, and maybe this is also perhaps with the help of Lisa, but I would get lost in the house because I couldn't remember what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I walked around aimlessly a lot and would try to find the bathroom and I couldn't. That's one, yeah. Memory, I feel like this is deep down there as a memory that I just couldn't remember what I was doing 10 seconds ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. I remember Lisa telling me about that, just sharing it in some of our passive conversations. And I felt for you deeply, and I felt for her, you know, watching her love go through something so surreal. So thank you for sharing what that felt like. I know that this is kind of a hard conversation, and I really appreciate you both being so candid with me during this conversation.
Yeah.
So Lisa, how did it feel? You know, you Googled that and you were like, found out what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. This, and if you don't feel comfortable answering this question, just tell me.
Okay.
But how did you feel when you found out that your love was sick with cancer? What?
I was in shock. Mm-hmm. I remember, I mean, like I said earlier, I feel like I really found out in the middle of August before it was official. Mm-hmm. And I remember the doctor telling us about it. And I just remember sitting there just being like, oh, and thinking, I should be crying right now. Why aren't I crying? Mm-hmm. And I remember asking him, like, we're in the process of buying a house. What do we do? Like, is he going to live?
Yeah.
What do we do? And he was like, I don't know what you do. Like, and I just remember just like, why aren't I showing more emotion? Like, it was really confusing for me because I remember like getting this big life-changing news in a way and just being like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah. And then Eric was sleeping too when the doctor came in and told me this. And then he had to wake Eric up to tell him, hey, there's a tumor in your spine. We need to figure out what this is. And if it's cancer, that's kind of good. And if it's not cancer, we have no idea what to do. And I just remember Eric turning to me and saying, sorry, you married a dead man. And that really got me. I mean, even when I think about that now, I get pretty choked up. And then I asked his nurse too. I was like, we need to talk to somebody. Like, I need to talk to, like, I need support. I need emotional support. And I was like, are there counselors in the hospital? Like, somebody needs to come in and just be with us and help guide us through this. And they sent someone in, which was kind of helpful, but you know, they weren't like a trained therapist or anything, but.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is heavy for both of you guys.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to cry. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's hard. It is. And I feel good that I know. It feels good to be talking to somebody that knows, for me, mm-hmm. what that felt like. Because, like I said, I got that call. I will never forget 10:47. Yeah. And I remember going into Dornbecker because that's where she had her treatment. And we went there and we were sitting there in this tiny little like cold room, and her oncologists were phenomenal. So they were always very sensitive, and they came in and we all banded together as parents. Like I said, I'm remarried. Her dad is remarried. And any sort of differences that we had with one another, we put aside, and we were like, we're all going to be here for this baby because she needs her parents.
Yeah.
And so we're standing there in the room, and I had to just walk out for a second. When they said that, I had to just kind of walk out of the room and gather myself. And from that day on, I was like you, Lisa, I didn't allow myself to cry that much because I knew if I did, I would just break.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I held it all in for a long time. And I just, I remember feeling so helpless. And I remember when we met each other at Starbucks.
Yeah.
And you were so sweet. We had masks on and you were in shock and you just told me that you were in shock. Are you still in shock?
No, the shock is going, has gone down. But I just feel weird. I don't feel like myself. I don't feel back to myself. Mm-hmm. It's weird when people ask me how I'm doing and I don't feel like it's genuine to be like, I'm great. You know, yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I'm doing good, but Eric still has cancer and that's always weighing on me. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I can't say I'm great or I'm really good. Because it's like, he still has cancer.
You're still going through it.
Still dealing with it. So.
But yeah. The PTSD is real, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We kind of have a new normal right now. We're kind of coasting along. But every now and then, it just hits me, the reality and the gravity of his diagnosis and the fact that he has cancer and this is our life now. And yeah, that's really hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll be like at the grocery store and it just hits me and I just start feeling really emotional. I need to let it out. And it's like, now is not the time. Push it down. Wait until I get home.
Yeah. It's hard when it comes on, you know, it still comes on over here for me, like, and it's been 7 years. Mm-hmm. It still comes on. And you know, our diagnosis with Zion was, we were told that it was going to be 5 months, you know, 5 months, 5 months. We do this all the time with these kids, Hodgkin's lymphoma, 5 months.
Yeah.
Well, the cancer got my girl real bad and it got real bad. She ended up having to have a stem cell transplant. That's the only thing that saved her. So we sat there in the room because every single time they had to come in and they felt so bad because every single time they came in, it was like with Eric, they were like, we don't know why it's hanging on. Like, she's one in 5,000 kids that this protocol doesn't work for. Like, we don't know. And then they finally were like, this is it. Without saying that this is it, they said, this is it. Mm-hmm. And she had to go through that stem cell transplant. It was the most traumatic experience I can ever imagine. Aww. And, you know, it was really terrible. And, you know, that girl, she was ready to get out of there because she was ready to have her birthday. She was in there during Christmas and her birthday is January 31st. And she's like, I'm going to get out of here before my birthday. Like, I want to be out of here. And when, you know, that girl, Zion, they said, you have done this treatment faster than any kid has ever done it. Like, we don't know. What it is that you've done. And I mean, it's modern medicine, but I honestly think that because we've been together as a family, that she didn't have to worry about what was going on with us. Like, if she had to worry about if I was feeling weird around her dad or if he was feeling weird around me or whatever, we never showed her that. And so I know that our taking care of her and banding together as a family definitely had a lot to do with how the outcome
for her. Yeah.
So thank you for letting me talk about it because there's not a lot of people that I can talk to about it because they don't get it.
Yeah, I get that. They just
don't get it.
So, I'm so glad she's doing well.
Oh God, mm-hmm. Me too. You guys, she's rocking it over at OSU and just living her life and she's doing phenomenal and it's a miracle. You know, like it's a miracle.
OSU too, the good for you.
Yeah. OSU. And both her dad, stepdad and dad are ducks. So and both of our girls are at OSU.
Oh, so, Eric's a big Beaver fan.
Yeah. So we are now too. We've got the Beaver gear, we've got the U of O gear, we've got the whole thing. Great. And you know, we're platypus family. That's what a professor at OSU that we work with sometimes, she said, well, you're just going to be a platypus family now. So that's what we are. We're platypus.
Yep.
But these questions are for both of you guys. How did you find out, like, you knew the smells, you knew that there was pollution. Like, how did you feel when you first found out that there was pollution, and were you aware of it? Like, neither one of us were aware of it, I don't think, because you were a kid, your mom smelled it. Like, how did you feel when you were like, okay, J.H. Baxter's really doing something? How did you guys feel when that was going on?
Yeah, when reality hit, and then just kind of as this case is developing and learning, like, the truths about what they're doing, absolutely pissed off. Mm-hmm. It's just very angry, very angry, because they were cutting corners, you know, to mm-hmm. save money, and, you know, in turn for poisoning a community, poisoning people that had no idea. Mm-hmm. So I was very, and then I found out they were Californians. And it was just really just rich Californians. It just really, really angered me. So
yeah,
they don't care.
No.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
Yeah, I just remember, like, I think it was around the time that J.H. Baxter was getting shut down, and I remember watching the local news and them talking about J.H. Baxter and the dioxin and how they were, you know, DEQ was on them and all that. And I remember watching it and being like, Eric, this is, like, right by where you grew up. Like, do you know this? Should we tell your parents? Like that was, like, the first time I was realizing that this place was poisonous. I grew up in North Eugene, and I just remember, like, smelling it anytime I went to West Eugene, you know, that smell.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking nothing of it. It was just how West Eugene smells. And I remember when Eric and I started dating, I would be at his parents' house, like, in the summertime, and they'd have their windows open, and it was, you know, you would smell that, and it's just how West Eugene smells. And
yeah,
I didn't really think anything of it. Like, I was kind of following the story as they were getting shut down and stuff, and thinking, huh, it's interesting. And then after Eric was diagnosed with cancer, remember the hospitalist came in and was talking to him, and he said he was also a toxicologist, and he said that when people are diagnosed with things like this, he's always curious about what kinds of chemicals they're exposed to in their life. Mm. And he asked Eric, he was like, what do you do for work? What kind of chemicals are you exposed to, or have you been exposed to? And Eric was cute. He was like, well, you know, disinfecting spray stuff. And the hospitalist was like, yeah, no, that wouldn't cause anything like this. And Eric said, you know, he used to work at a couple bike shops in town as a bike mechanic. And he was like, yeah, we were exposed to some chemicals like that. Like, I wouldn't always wear gloves. But again, the hospitalist was like, yeah, just something to think about. And he told us about one of the Nike founders who died of cancer from inhaling the fumes from the waffle iron, pressing the soles of the shoes. And he just used that as an example. And he was like, yeah, I'm just curious, because that's just where my mind goes. And he left. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, huh. And then that night, it just, like, hit me like a light bulb about seeing J.H. Baxter in the news and Eric's proximity to the factory growing up. And then I just kind of went down the rabbit hole on the internet about J.H. Baxter, and was like, I got really angry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is it. This has got to be it.
Yep.
Especially, you know, with Eric, who was so healthy otherwise, and cancer doesn't really run in his family. So it's like,
yep.
I don't know. And he's so young. And this is a pediatric cancer. Like, it's even more rare that he's an adult with it.
That's so mostly that's so scary.
It's children, which is really sad. So,
yeah. When I found out about it, I was like, I didn't know. And I didn't know what was happening until my best friend's son got sick. When he got sick, I was like, wait a second. There's something going on here that's not normal. And so I got all in. I went down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And I was learning how retorts worked. And I was learning what sort of chemicals they used on the facility. And I was reading through all these documents that I don't understand. So I had to like Google what it meant. And I was thinking to myself, if our kids could go through all of those cancer treatments, if people are getting sick like this, I can sit here and read through these documents and try to figure out what's going on. So I did. I went down that hole, and the ruckus that I made on social media, you know, Lisa was like, hey, how do you know so much about this place? What's going on? And I said, well, you know, this is what's happening. This is what has happened. And she said, whoa. And she asked me, okay, well, what are you going to do? What did you do for work? And I said, well, I was a hairstylist. And this, you know, was during the pandemic. It was November of 2020 that I started working at Beyond Toxics. And so when Lisa and I met, we were in masks. And she said, no, she goes, well, what are you going to do, you know, after the pandemic? And I said, well, I'll just go back to doing aesthetics, because I didn't want to do hair, because I didn't care about hair anymore. When Zion lost her hair, I was like, I don't care about hair. So I was like, I'm just going to go back to do aesthetics. And she was like, no. And I said, what? She's like, no, you have missed your calling. And we want you to come and work with us and teach you about nonprofit and teach you about environmental justice. And we want you to come and work with us. And so I said, okay, that's great. And so here I am. And, you know, it's not so much now, but this is a trigger. This job is a trigger.
Yeah.
And it was worse before I went to therapy, because I went to trauma therapy to deal with the emotions that I didn't let out when Zion was sick. I didn't deal with it. I just sort of pushed it down, and it was affecting me. And so I learned over time how to not control those feelings, but how to not bring so much of that into my work. And you know, I'm doing it. It's still really sad. Like, I still cry and I still get pissed, and it's mostly pissed now that I'm it's mostly mad.
Well, that's good though. That's good. You don't need to cry anymore. Let's just start fighting this.
Yeah, because I mean, tears gives them power. You know, the tears aren't doing anything for us except making us stressed out and sick. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's okay to cry, but at the same time, it's like, you got to get mad. You got to get mad. And getting mad is what got her. I believe she hasn't even told everything that happened. I think that she just told a little bit, and things are going to unravel. And I don't know this for certain. Everybody out there that's listening, I don't know for certain, but I don't believe what she said.
Oh, no.
No. So what does it feel like? Like, for me, knowing Georgia is, oh, I did it. You know, I lied. Knowing that she did that and she's going to get some sentencing and all that, I feel good about that. I feel like us as a community, we banded together and we said, not today, not in our community. We're not having it. And we found out. She got found out.
Right.
So for me, I feel super excited that I've been celebrating the whole time. I've been celebrating. And I'm going to ask you all, and if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to, but what would you say to her if you could? I mean, if I could say something to her, I can't say exactly what I would say to her here on the podcast, because there's a whole lot of cussing and stuff. So I had to keep it PG. I had to keep it on the G. So if I, you know, if I saw her and I walked up to her, I would just ask her like how she sleeps and what would she do if this was her family. And just a really simple, like, why? Why? Yeah. What would you
say? Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be more in a form of a question.
Mm-hmm.
There's no use in really anything else than insulting her or whatnot. Of course, I'm going to be really mad and I got a mouth, but...
Well, we're lions. We roar. Yeah. When people make us mad, we roar about it.
Yeah, but yeah, I would ask her something to investigate her. She's a sociopath or not, you know, it's just...
Yeah. I mean, that's like...
Like, what are you doing? What were you thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Were you thinking? I'd wonder if she even feels bad about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So... Maybe that's not a good question.
No,
I'm afraid of that answer.
No, you don't need to be afraid of that answer. That was the beautiful, perfect answer, because you have a reason to say stuff that's not PG. You have a reason. And I think that you answered that question beautifully, because I think the most powerful thing to say to her is why.
Yes.
Why? So has your life sort of, you know, you said that it's gotten back to the new normal. Mm-hmm. Do you all feel like you are in stride? You know, Eric, you're still going through all this stuff. Like, you know, it hits you all of a sudden in your emotions and stuff every once in a while. Do you feel like you've kind of gotten back to normal a little bit?
Honestly, Audrey, I keep saying it. It's still just a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
I get to a point where, like, oh, I think I'm ascending. I'm getting better. I'm progressing. I'm getting stronger, gaining weight, and then something symptomatic happens, and it can be a lot. It's been a lot of different things, and it slows me down or I drop, and I still struggle with a lot of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like kind of a precarious balance, and that's kind of how I feel about my head, is that I feel like it's yeah, that's the best word I can think of, is it's precarious. It's
mm-hmm.
at any moment something might happen. And I try to keep my thoughts positive and my head up, and for the most part, I do. And for the most part, I'm living independently again. But I couldn't do this without Lisa next to me.
Oh my gosh.
So, but I got good things in my life that I'm thankful for. So I'm still trucking. I'm still going. Things are fine. I deal with those bumps and those crashes sometimes. And so far, so good.
That's amazing. And I'm glad that you guys have each other. It's, mm-hmm. You persevered through something that breaks families up. And I feel happy for both of you to have one another. It's that in and of itself is a miracle as well.
Yeah. So,
yeah. So thank you both so much for sharing these intimate moments and thoughts with me. I've wanted to talk to you both for a really long time. And, you know, I kept saying, oh, you should be on the show. And I would see you all on interviews, and you'd be able to say a couple few things. But I really wanted you all to have an opportunity to have this kind of conversation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Today it feels right to me today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I feel honored. You're very welcome.
Yeah.
Your story matters. Your truth matters. Your voice matters, and I'm so happy that I was able to share the space with you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes,
thank you, Audrey.
You're so very welcome. So you all out there, cancer is a heavy, heavy, scary, hard subject to discuss. And I always like to end it on a positive note. I always like to end it with a little extra something that has the folks to carry away with something digestible in a positive way and not help them, not make them feel triggered. So I'm going to ask, I saw your little fur baby coming up in the camera when we first started. How's he doing? How's he like integrating himself into your lives? How's that?
He's first I'll say this. He's absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. We love him very, very much. He's also a butthead. But he is my therapy as well. Mm. So we have a good relationship, and I spend a lot of time with him every day. Oh. Yeah. He's a good boy. He's a spoiled boy. He's a good boy.
Well, he has to be.
He has to be. Yeah. Yeah. I gotta give my love to someone.
Yeah. And I'm sure he just digests every single ounce of it.
Mm-hmm. He loves it.
I saw you on some rollerblades. Are you still, what's going on with those? Are you back on those?
Every once in a while, I gain the courage to try. It's a work in progress. My balance isn't the best.
Well, Lisa shared a picture with me, and I was like, I showed my Lisa, and she was like, oh my gosh. And I said, I know. Look at him on the rollerblades. They've seen a picture of you with the dog. Like you all are. We talk about you, not just for this, but we talk about you. I mention you quite a bit.
Yeah. So,
and what, Lisa? Uh-huh. What are you looking forward to most? You know, I know Eric still has a lot of healing to do. What is something that you're looking forward to when he's feeling up to it? And did you get a chance to do it yet?
I mean, one thing that I missed and wondered if we'd ever get to do it again when he was really sick was travel together and go on trips together. And this summer we went to one of his friend's weddings in LA and spent some time there. And I remember saying, like, hey, we can do this. Like, you're doing good. Like, we can do this again. And that was a really exciting thing. I was like, let's plan a trip somewhere or something.
Yeah.
Because before, you know, I really wondered if we could ever do anything like that again, if he was ever going to be well enough again. So it's nice to know that we can, and he is. So
that's giving you something to look forward to.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah,
a good vacation is in our future.
It's warranted. Yeah. Not just one, several, as many as your body can handle, and your pocketbook allows you. Just go for it.
We deserve it after all that we've been through.
You do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be sending all the positive vacation vibes your way, and I'm hoping that you're going to tell me when you're going somewhere.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, you don't have to. I'm just nosy.
Yeah.
Nosy. Thank you both again for sharing this space, speaking with me. It's really healing for me. This is I'm super proud of myself for not crying, and I think the reason why is because you understand, and I know what cancer feels like in your family, and it just, the only person that I've ever been able to talk to about it that understood was my best friend. Mm-hmm. And we're so close that it's not help. It doesn't help to talk to one another because it just doesn't help, because she's feeling my pain, I'm feeling her pain. And it's just, this was really special for me. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course, anytime. Again, I'm Marjorie. Thank you for listening to Why We Do the Work, or reading, because these episodes are also transcribed. So thank you very much, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.